The opinions expressed during this program are solely those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, management, staff, or advertisers of WMGQ Magic 98.3.
Today's program is all about water, the No Lead campaign, and the state of the drought. Hi, I'm Maggie Glynn. Thanks for listening to At Central Jersey. Joining me to talk about the No Lead campaign is the New Jersey Department of Health Commissioner, Kathy Bennett. Thank you so much for being on At Central Jersey.
Thank you, Maggie. I'm happy to join you.
All right. Now, this is very important to let parents know, all parents know, what the issues are with lead. So let's talk about the campaign. What made you decide to put this campaign together and get it out there and let people know what's going on and what to be aware of?
Well, as you know, Maggie, childhood lead exposure remains an important public health challenge for New Jersey as well as for the nation. And so here in the state of New Jersey, public health officials and health providers, which have created a strong foundation to combat lead exposure, are building on our progress to further safeguard our children's health. And that was the genesis for the new lead prevention campaign called No Lead.
And I love how the play on words, K-N-O-W, lead, L-E-A-D, also No Lead. I guess we're just trying to really let people know about this, because as I read in some of your information, there really is no safe level of lead in children, is there?
No, there really isn't. And that's something that as a population health action team, which is comprised of myself and my fellow commissioners from the cabinet, as well as, you know, our public health partners and other health providers have really been focused on, because we're concerned about the impact of any lead on children.
Now, New Jersey is one of the states that has, you know, called attention to this, called attention to why you should pay attention to lead exposure. And I believe it's one in two the pediatricians check for this.
Right. New Jersey is one of only 17 states nationwide that require universal lead testing of all children at ages one and two. Other states target screenings only to children at increased risk for lead exposure. So New Jersey's approach is far more protective, and our primary care providers and our local health departments are working very hard to ensure that children are screened. And that's why at least 95% of all children in Jersey have had at least one lead test before 6 years of age.
And, you know, parents who, you know, you're never aware of these things, I think, until you have children. And so for parents and for grandparents also, to know how important this is to test for lead, because it really, it can cause some major neurological problems in children, can it?
It can. And that's one of the reasons why we're actually really focused on parents understanding what are the potential sources of lead in their homes. And that can be, you know, our older homes with aging infrastructure that have lead-based paint. So basically, if your house was built before 1978, there's the possibility of that. But interestingly, and actually, you know, in a way that should, you know, alert us all, about 30% of cases where children have elevated blood lead levels, it's through other sources. And that can be imported goods such as toys, cosmetics, candy, or spices. It can be herbal remedies. It could be ceramic pottery. So there are many other sources beyond just lead paint, even though lead paint remains the majority of these sources.
And, you know, I noticed in some of your information also what I didn't really think about, contaminated soil and air. I mean, even to the point where you recommend, you know what, if you're out playing, you know, take your shoes off when you come home. Some basic things that families and parents should know.
That's exactly it. You know, I think one of the things that we've been focused on is prevention as well as testing. And prevention is, you know, as simple as making sure if you do live in an older home that you check our website out and you follow us. Just do hashtag no lead. Follow us on Twitter and see new information on what you can do within your own environment to help protect your children. So that could be as simple as making sure that you're dusting your windowsills and along the floor if you see a lot of dust, particularly if you're in an older home, a pre-1978 home, just making sure that those sources don't remain in your house. And, you know, we're worried about the environmental, as you say, from the outside, so making sure you take your shoes off when you come into your house. So there are some steps that you can take as parents to further minimize the impacts.
And, you know, some parents who get, and I've had friends who've experienced this, they take their child in for that lead test, 1 and 2 years old, and it really is a panic. When that comes back very high, there is a level of panic. And I think that, you know, this campaign that you're doing, addressing that there are so many steps that can be taken to take care of this. And I know personally a few cases where it was from doing major renovations in the home. And how do you deal with that? Instead of panicking, there are steps you can take, right, to correct this.
Yeah, there absolutely are. And I think, you know, the first thing is that all parents should make sure that age one and again at age two that you have your children tested for lead. And that can be a simple, what's now called a capillary test, you know, finger prick, to determine whether or not there is an elevated blood lead level. I will say in New Jersey, we've had some really good news because over the last 20 years, we've been paying really close attention to this. And we have more than 20 times increased the number of children that are screened annually. So we went from about 10,200 children back in 1998 to over 206,200 children just last year.
Wow, so you're really moving forward quickly with this to make sure these kids are tested.
Exactly. But then you add into this, at the same time as we're dramatically increasing the number of children tested, since this time, in the past 20 years, we've actually cut in half the number of New Jersey children with elevated blood lead levels.
That's pretty outstanding. And is this from these campaigns and getting the pediatricians on board and also, you know, making it law that you really need to check for this? Is that because of the focus that's been put on this for all these years at this point?
I think it is a great testament to the work of public health and public health together with all of our partners. Which include our healthcare providers, our women, infant, and children's programs, our local health departments, and our clinicians and our physicians who are conducting the lead tests and making sure parents are aware of the importance of having it done. But, you know, in addition to that, as we continue with this enhanced commitment to ensuring that, you know, we eradicate lead, the governor this past year announced the dedication of an additional $10 million in the 2016 budget to support an improved lead remediation and containment program for low and moderate income households where lead paint could be found. There was $10 million that was provided to help support the testing of water in schools to ensure that we also had lead-free water in schools.
Yeah, and, you know, let's talk about that, because I think that was a surprise, I know, in some schools, finding that there was lead in the water. And there is a deadline now, isn't there, for all the schools to be tested. Is it a year out? I don't really know positively what it is, but I know all the schools have to, public schools have to be tested.
Right. The governor's new mandate actually applies to about 3,000 schools here in our state, beginning in the 2016-2017 school year. So the Department of Ed is going to require the school officials to publicly also post what their test results are. So you see a lot more information about it. But I think one of the things that we do want to stress is that even if there is lead found in the water, lead alone in the water alone is not typically the cause for an elevated blood lead level. It's lead in the water that together with lead from another source, which would create an issue.
Right. But I think looking at that and seeing if you can go forward and eliminate that, too, especially now that we know that that is an issue in some schools, because truly, if you look at the age of the schools, this shouldn't be so much of a shock at this point.
Right. Well, we know that aging infrastructure tends to be the biggest challenge. And so that even where communities have, you know, safe water, it's not an issue with that. It could be something as simple as pipes being soldered with, you know, lead.
Right,
In older buildings.
And, you know, I see that a number of the school systems in the state jumped on this immediately and, you know, didn't even wait. Did you think some of the other districts, are they waiting for the money before they do this? Or what's the holdup? It's not that big of a deal to test the water, is it?
I can't actually give you any information around the number of schools that have been tested yet. But I would suggest taking a look at, you know, to the Department of Education for more information on that, or again, because the Department of Education is going to be requiring schools to post the results, to take a look at the websites in your own communities.
Okay, so let's go back to the testing. You know, 1 and 2 years old, highly recommended that this be done. And I just want to, we discussed a few of the things that parents should be aware of, but the exposure can really affect kids in the long term. I assume that's why you want this campaign, the No Lead campaign, you know, to really help children immediately so they don't encounter these problems, lowered intelligence, hyperactivity, attention deficits, developmental problems, decreased hearing.
Correct.
It really can make such a severe impact on a child's life.
I think, you know, we've learned more and more over the years about the impacts of lead in the body and the serious problems it could cause. The issue with lead is that it can build up in the body over a period of months or years, and that's one of the reasons why we require that all children get tested at age one and again at age two. And that's why we're, you know, so concerned about making sure that our children by age six have had at least one blood lead test conducted. And that's why we're really proud of the fact that, you know, New Jersey's health providers and public health providers, together with New Jersey's parents, have shown an equal commitment, where we have 95% of our children under the age of six of being tested each year.
And, you know, people, kids who are transferring, you know, moving into New Jersey when they're older, if you're doing this kind of campaign, I'm guessing, you know, older than six, you want them to know you need to do this. You should do it, even if you are older. It's never too late if you haven't been tested, right?
That's correct. You can be tested, and if you do have elevated lead levels, and it's, you know, and according to the CDC, it's over 5 micrograms per deciliter, that you can actually begin to do case management and interventions, such as doing an environmental assessment of your home and making decisions. Are there things that you can do from a remediation or a prevention perspective? If you have even further elevated lead levels, you can actually take, you know, clinical interventions such as chelation to help remove the lead from your bloodstream.
Right. So it really is important to know. And if there is information that you could give out that people, if you know, can go to your website, can ask their doctors, can check the information that you have
and
you know, find
simply,
physicians. Yes.
Yep. And real simply, they could just use hashtag NoLead, and they'll be directed to our website. They can be directed to our social media and other social media platforms to learn what they need to learn and to get connected to other resources for information. In addition, we have an 800 number that you can call. It's a 24-hour hotline at 1-800-222-1222. And we have folks that are available to answer any questions that you may have.
Great. And what would you say to parents and grandparents if you were encouraging them to look at these tests and don't be fearful if the numbers come up high? There are things that can be done, right?
That's absolutely true. We want parents and other, you know, caregivers for their children just to be aware that there are sources of lead that still exist, that we're really focused on eradicating it, and that we are very, very focused on making sure that all children get tested at age one and again at age two, and that definitely by age six that they've had at least one blood lead level test done, and that if they have any concerns about their home environment, they can actually contact us through our 800 number, or they can just track us on hashtag NoLead, and they can get more information, because the more information they have, the more steps they can take within their own environment to ensure a safe environment for their children.
All right. Well, New Jersey Department of Health Commissioner Kathy Bennett, thank you so much for being part of At Central Jersey.
Thank you so much, Maggie. I appreciate it.
You're listening to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn. Let's get some info on the drought. Joining me to talk about the drought issue in New Jersey is Dr. Dave Robinson. He is the New Jersey State Climatologist. Thanks for being part of At Central Jersey.
My pleasure. Nice to be back.
All right. So how bad is the drought in New Jersey? Is this a serious issue that we're having right now?
It's potentially evolving into a serious issue. Certainly serious enough that it was prudent for the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection to take the drought watch they had issued midsummer and make it a drought warning several weeks ago. We've been having about two-thirds of average precipitation since way back at the beginning of the growing season last spring. We had one of the warmest summers on record that helped things dry up even faster. And as a result, here we are in mid-fall, heading towards winter, with our reservoirs 20% or so below where they should be at this time of the year. Rivers are flowing at very low levels. Groundwater is deeper down in the ground, so you've got to reach down further in your well to grab some water. So, you know, we're not in major jeopardy right now. There's no need for a drought emergency at this point where there would be restricted usage of water. But if we don't conserve water over the course of the winter months and Mother Nature doesn't provide enough rain and snow, then we may be in more dire straits come next spring.
What would be, I'm going to ask you what you see coming in the future. We're going to touch on that in 1 second, but I want to ask you as consumers, residents of New Jersey, at the point what you're talking about right now, what should we be aware of?
I think be aware of the fact that the water levels are lower than they should be at this time of the year, and that every drop of water we use is precious. We have big ocean off there to our east, but it does us no good. We rely on rainwater, fresh water, that falls on our land, held in our reservoirs, and down deeper in the ground. We need that for potable water. And if with the almost 9 million people in New Jersey, if we don't use that carefully, it is a resource that could disappear.
All right. Now, Dr. Robinson, looking at this and looking toward the future, what are you seeing as the state climatologist? I know, look into your crystal ball and tell us, to the best of what you can see, what it looks like coming down.
It's a foggy one. I can tell you there's no major pattern shift in sight. However, we're getting into the winter months, and with that, the chances of what we call a mid-latitude storm, and if it parks itself off the East Coast, we call it a nor'easter, there's chances of those coming along, and there will be opportunities. Usually once or twice a week during the cool season, there'll be some storm system making its way across the country. Just whether it will come in our direction and whether it will be able to tap a lot of moisture remains to be seen. There's nothing that suggests we should have a dry winter. However, there's nothing to suggest it will be a wet one either. Here in the middle Atlantic states, we're squeezed between the pole and the equator and an ocean and a continent, and it's very difficult in this particular part of the world to do long-range forecasting.
So, no pun intended with the drought issue. Things really are up in the air. I mean, we really are not sure what's coming down the line, and it could potentially, as you said, it could get worse.
It absolutely could get worse. We've had these sneakier droughts come during the winter season, and we don't want to be caught by surprise. I don't think we will, given the actions of DEP. But we're going to have to keep a careful eye, because you don't notice it so much in the winter. You're not looking for things to be green.
Right.
And evaporation route levels are very low, so even if we get some light rain, it can get the ground moist. But we've really got to keep an eye on the springs and the rivers and the reservoirs to see if they're filling up over the winter season. Now, normally reservoirs are down to, 70% of capacity once you get to October, and then they get replenished during the cool season. Well, we're down below 50% of capacity on general average in northern and central New Jersey. So we don't want to just bring them up 30% to 80% full as we go into the next summer, next warm season. We'd really like that extra precipitation to get them near brim full.
Right, right. And then go in with some confidence as we head into the next summer.
Yeah, I always like to call it a cushion. Because here in New Jersey, we realize that our water levels can fall pretty quickly during hot, dry summer periods. We just don't have that many gallons of water per person in storage here in New Jersey. For instance, New York City residents, they have more per person in storage up in their Catskill watershed. We're in a little more precarious position here in New Jersey. Now, it's not all bad news. One thing that's good about our precipitation regime, our climatology in New Jersey, is that every month has the opportunity, on average, to pick up 3 to 4.5 inches of rain. from our driest to our wettest months over the course of the year. And with that, we can start climbing out of a dry situation or a drought any time of the year. You look to the West Coast. If they don't climb out of a drought conditions come March or April, it doesn't rain there until the following fall. So the good news is here we have opportunities at any time of the year to come out of this. And that should give us a little solace as we have, you know, 4, 5, 6 months until we get to May, April, and May. And at that point, we're really going to have to look at things carefully because there, if we don't bring things back up to par, then there may be restrictions. The drought warning right now is simply gives the DEP the ability to redirect water supplies, work with water purveyors, and share water around the state to reduce the amount of water flowing over the out of our reservoirs and downstream without harming life downstream.
Right.
When it comes to an emergency, that's when you start talking about restrictions. And I might add, no one's talking about that right now, but that's something that's going to have to be looked at seriously come later winter and spring.
Well, and the DEP now also with this, you know, can make, it's really about making a public, I think, aware, I mean, which is what we're trying to do today, too, with this interview, that you should be cognizant of where we are drought-wise in the state at this point.
That's a great point, and it gets back to my thoughts about how in the winter it's tough to realize this. Now, also, it's more difficult to conserve water in the winter. The easiest thing to do in the summer is to turn your tap off outside in washing cars or watering lawns and gardens, reducing it or eliminating that. But in the winter, it's really tough to cut things back because we're in an age with low-flow shower heads and dishwashers and washing machines that are more water conservation-minded than they were, say, 30 or 40 years ago. But we can still do a few things that you may want to talk about in terms of reducing water consumption in the house as we get through this winter.
Yeah, I mean, can you discuss a few of the things that we should be aware of?
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, it's something as simple as turning off the water as you're brushing your teeth, doing full loads of laundry, and waiting till your dishwasher is full before using it. All of these things, oh, and of course, shorter showers along the way. All of these things can, you know, a gallon saved here, a gallon saved there, times the 9 million people in the state.
That's a lot of gallons. That's a lot of water.
It can go a long way to helping to stave off something that might be more restrictive down the road.
Right. And, you know, as you're saying, you don't even think, I think, a lot about, you know, when you're brushing your teeth, but you really can save a lot of water. That's a lot of gallons. And as you point out, with all of us doing that, it really might help us down the line, because that could be a pretty miserable summer if we don't get rain before then, a lot of rain or snow.
Yeah. I might also suggest if you've got a drip, drip, drip on any faucet in your house, you'd be surprised how much water you can lose from a leaky faucet.
Time to fix it. And, you know, before you go, we have to speak. I want to speak a little bit about snow because I think you were on about a year ago, and we never got to really touch about the global snow lab that you're involved with. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, thanks. It's one of my hats I wear here at Rutgers, my research hat. I've been monitoring snow cover over northern hemisphere lands since my graduate days back many years ago. I maintain a database where we track the extent of snow, and we look at the role of snow in the climate system. One of those things when it's often a chicken and egg question, is there more snow than normal because it's cold, or is it cold because there's more snow than normal?
That's my question.
the answer to that is yes, and it all depends on the situation, but things are really fascinating in that realm. For instance, this past October, we have 50 years of satellite-based snow cover records over northern hemisphere lands, and it was the fourth most extensive snow cover over Canada and over Siberia this past October. Meanwhile, further north in the Arctic Basin, where there's an ocean sitting with some sea ice on it, it was the least amount of sea ice for October. So the top of the Earth was really cooking,
yeah.
And things are very slow to freeze up, but you get to the subpolar regions, and the cold was concentrated there, along with some moisture from all the open water in the Arctic, and it resulted in a snowy October in the subpolar regions. And here in the United States, representing a mid-latitude location, it was the third warmest October in over 120 years of record.
Now, Dr. Robinson, when you look at this data and you see these changes, what does that point out to you as you keep track of this all these years?
Right. Well, there's no question to me that the climate is changing and humans are playing a role in this. When I started in this business in the 70s and 80s as a grad student, I never imagined I'd see a day when there was so little summer sea ice in the Arctic. I never imagined a day when I'd be continuing to monitor spring snow cover and seeing it leave 1, 2, 3 weeks earlier than it had just 30, 40 years ago. These are just several of the indicators that suggest that there is something significant going on with our climate system.
And when you talk about, those changes in the spring, 2, 3, 4 weeks, that really is a large period of time. That's really something to note, isn't it?
It is, and it gets right back to the water issue again, because the spring snowmelt provides moisture for irrigation downstream. It provides moisture for fields where crops are going to germinate. And as we saw this past spring up in Canada, where they had some massive forest fires near Fort McMurray, it allowed the snow melted off early. It allowed the ground to dry out and temperatures to rise. And they had this major, major fire at a time of the year when it's often snow-covered and cold still.
Can the public, anyone who's listening to this and, seeing these connections that you're talking about, how can they find out more about this? Is there somewhere they can go and look at some of the data from the Global Snow Lab, or do you ever have anything for the public?
Yeah, we post all of our data. We post a daily map of snow extent across the hemisphere and the anomalous snow cover. So you can find out, there should have been snow there and there's not, and vice versa. It's simply snowcover.org. That's our website. It's freely open to the public. Anyone is welcome to view it. And I think it's pretty easy to navigate yourself through daily snow maps or looking back at past months and seasons. So I invite anyone with an interest in that to do so. And there's a button there they can contact for us for more information. We're data friendly here at State University, where it's open to the public, whether it's our snow page, or you can go on and look at our weather network, where we monitor weather at 65 stations around New Jersey every 5 minutes. And that is simply just njweather.org.
That's fascinating. And now, before I let you go, doing all this research all these years, being a state climatologist for so many years, I'm sure you've seen a lot of change in the climate, some of the data that you're talking about. What's the most important thing that you would like people to know that you've seen as a researcher?
Well, in terms of my research, it's what I've seen up in the polar regions where I do concentrate my research. There's no question about that. Here in New Jersey, my greatest concern is that we're warmer than we've been in the past. The nearby oceans are warmer than in the past. There's more energy in the atmosphere, and there's also more moisture in the atmosphere. So that doesn't mean it's going to rain every day. That doesn't mean we're going to break heat records every day. But when there are triggers that would set off a strong storm like Sandy, or triggers that would institute a heat wave, or an exceptionally heavy rainstorm, or, believe it or not, conversely, make a drought more severe, that's what we've got here in New Jersey right now. We're amped up. There's more energy. Our baseline is one of warmer, moister atmospheres, and thus every weather event has the potential to be more exceptional than we've seen in the past.
So it sounds like we should be paying attention to what appears to be extremes.
That is certainly the key of the day. And the one thing we're recognizing is that we've always had natural extremes, but now we're just kind of starting them at a higher base or a higher playing field. So the warm gets warmest and the wet gets wetter. So that makes it a challenge to be able to explain to people when they're used to natural variability how we're just adding to that with what we're doing to the climate system. But we're trying our best. It's a burgeoning field of attribution studies, we call them, in climate. And hopefully that will help people better understand, because that's what we're here to do, help people better understand what's going on so that they can take this information and make prudent decisions as the user community, as stakeholders. If If we just sit here and hold the information to ourselves, it's not going to do as much good as if we get it out there for people to help make decisions.
And anyone interested can check that data. And Dr. David Robinson, thank you so much for being part of At Central Jersey.
Maggie, my pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Missed a show? Listen online or download episodes at magic983.com.